Chapter 2. Pharos. And the decree was, Let light be. And so it was, and it was good. Proscribed creation myth, proto-Catholic teachings, pre-unification. Dantioch, warsmith of the Iron Warriors, stood in the cold chamber high on the summit of Mount Pharos and held Gilliman's gaze. It was extraordinary. There was no lag or delay. The image and sound of Ultramar's lord was an entirely realized presence. It was as though they were sharing the room, except that no echo accompanied Gilliman's voice and no fume of breath came from his lips, suggesting that the room he actually occupied was smaller and warmer.
"Forgive me, my lord," said Dantioch.
He reached out an iron-clad hand and pressed his fingertips against Gilliman's sternum. There was a slight resistance as Dantioch's fingers slipped into Gilliman's form, causing a slight spreading ripple of light to shimmer his image for a moment. Dantioch withdrew his hand.
"I'm sorry," he said. "You seemed so real."
"You are on Sotha?" Gilliman asked. "We are communicating at this distance."
Dantioch nodded.
"I am in a chamber known as Primary Location Alpha, near the top of the Pharos structure. We test-started the system 3 weeks ago, local, and the system has been running for 2 weeks. Since then, I have been attempting to establish communication."
Gilliman shook his head, marvelling.
"We saw your light for the first time tonight," he said.
"Roughly when alignment was properly established," Dantioch noted, "which in turn allowed this conversation to take place."
"You are like a star, a new star."
"I would appreciate any data you can process back to us via this link," Dantioch said. "To understand in more detail how we are received will allow us to fine-tune the connection."
"This is technology of a level we can scarcely dream of, Warsmith," said Gilliman.
"We did not dream of it," replied Dantioch. "It was dreamed of by beings who came and went long before us. Yet you suspected its worth, imagined its potential, and trusted me to unlock its secrets. This vision, both literal and metaphorical, is due to you, my lord."
Sotha was a far-flung world close to the edge of the galaxy's eastern fringe. It lay farther out than Grya or Thandros, almost at the limits of both the fiefdom of the 500 worlds and the span of all Imperial territory. Not far beyond it, in warpcraft terms, lay the rim of the Ultima Segmentum and the edge of the human galaxy. Past that vast thinning out of stars and systems lay nothing but the black, heatless void of the intergalactic gulf. Sotha was a jewel of a world, one of the few terra-comparable ecosystems discovered so far out in the galactic east. It possessed living oceans and densely forested mountainous land masses. There were lower-level animal forms, avians and insects. Curiously, there were no higher forms, nor any obvious trace of attempted Xenos visitation or colonization. Gilliman and the expedition fleets of Ultramar had always considered the world a particular curiosity. If there was one geotype almost guaranteed to have been settled during the outward expansion of the great age of technology, it was the rare and precious terra-comparable planets. For Sotha to have been overlooked or missed by the great expansionists seemed unlikely. But there was no evidence that any human presence had reached Sotha, not even a colony that had been established and then died out. Then the surveyors learned the truth about Mount Pharos, the tallest of all the peaks in the planet's majestic mountain ranges. Plans for full colonization were put on hold. A small agri-colony was approved instead, to be based on Sotha in support of a survey mission of archaeologists and xeno-culturists assigned to Mount Pharos. A dedicated company of ultramarines, the 199th, was assigned to Sotha as permanent protection, and the world was given the classification Restricted. All that had happened 127 years earlier. Dantioch had been out on the promontory at sunset when the ultramarines of the Protection Company came to tell him that signs of contact were finally becoming apparent. It was about time. The ancient systems of the Pharos, vast quantum pulse engines of almost inscrutable function, had been running for 2 weeks. Dantioch had begun to fear that he and the men he worked with had entirely misconceived the purpose and use of the artifacts. It was late afternoon, the particular moment when the light above the forests and distant sea outside began to skew away, filling the apertures of the summit behind the promontory with a phantom luminescence. It was the best time to appreciate the sheer magnificence of the structure.
"There is a sign at last?" he asked.
One of the ultramarines, a sergeant called Arcus, nodded. He was accompanied by 2 young men of the company's scout section. The Ultramarines 199th had made the best of their residency on Sotha by taking pride in their specialist duty. They had adopted the name Aegida, or Shield Company, while operating from the Legion Orbital. They had also taken up a symbol as their company icon. Both the scouts wore it on their pauldrons.
"There are signs, sir," said Arcus. "Noises in the acoustic chambers."
"At last," Dantioch said.
He limped across the rocky promontory to follow them inside the mountain, every step an effort for his massive, iron-framed physique. He no longer cared to disguise the attenuated gasps of pain that movement forced out of him. He had been genetically fabricated to withstand superhuman tolerances, and, by the damned Emperor, he was withstanding them. At the threshold of one of the vast apertures which opened like a giant eye socket in the mountainside, Dantioch turned back to look at the evening sky. Beyond the high cloud, he could detect the malicious disturbance of the ruin storm. It was easier to see at night, usually, but even in daylight hours, the traumatic warp spasms and ripples shimmering through space were visible. The trigger point for the ruin storm had been the attack on Kalth 28 months earlier. Its hideous effects had rapidly spread right across the segmentum and had engulfed the 500 worlds of Ultramar. No one knew how far the storm effects went. Some said they had possessed the entire galaxy. What was certainly true was that they had rendered the 500 worlds unnavigable, except for the most high-risk enterprises. Trade and communication had collapsed. Ultramar, as a single and admirable area of governance, was ruined. Furthermore, all interstellar transit between the eastern fringe and the core segmenta and beloved Terra was impossible. The galaxy was, in effect, cut in two. Lord Barabbas Dantioch, warsmith of the 4th Legion Iron Warriors, was technically a traitor. He was a traitor to the throne and Terra because his legion had crossed the line and sided with the renegade warmaster, Horus. Simultaneously, he was a traitor to his own legion because he had forsworn the Iron Warriors and decided to stand with the loyalists. He stood alone, besieged by the conflicting loyalties of the new Riven Imperium. Being besieged suited all Iron Warriors, of course, no matter their inclination. No legion matched them for their artistry in fortification, except perhaps for the 7th Legion, the Imperial Fists. The comparative technical excellences of the 4th and the 7th would be put to the ultimate test, Dantioch was sure, before the Civil War ended. In fact, given that the morality of the Imperium had already been turned upside down by Horus's revolt, it would seem a waste of the opportunity if the ancient rivalry was not tested by war. For his excellence in siegecraft and his staunch loyalty to the Emperor, Barabbas Dantioch had been recruited by the Lords of Ultramar to help them construct and defend the greatest contingency plan and perhaps the second greatest heresy the Imperium had ever known. Dantioch had accepted the challenge. He had supposed he would be employed in fortifying the physical defences of Macragge and other key worlds of Ultramar. That was his forte. Then the avenging sun had revealed to him the long-sequestered mysteries of Sotha, and Dantioch had realized that the survival of a pocket empire like Ultramar lay less in fortifying its physical defenses and far, far more in strengthening its function and operation. He agreed absolutely with Rubute Gilliman. Sotha offered a way in which they might overcome the ruined storm, rather than batten down against its wrath. Dantioch had spent the last 9 months working to that end, unlocking Sotha's mysteries and activating the planet's deep-time secrets. The day's ebbing light shone into the aperture in the great coiled chamber. The interior spaces of the Pharos, each one of them cut from the mountain's living rock by processes that no one had been able to explain, reminded Dantioch of the inner spaces of a great conch shell. They were polished, smooth, and curved. There were no straight lines or hard edges. Vast, organically curved chambers led one into another, sometimes connected by smaller flask chambers or rounded coils of hallway that felt like tubes or blood vessels. Everything was a polished, gleaming black, a surface treatment of the exposed rock that was durable and resistant to scratching or cutting. It was like a black mirror, yet it gave back very little reflection, just the merest shadow, and held very little light, except for when, at the end of each day, the sunset flooded through the mountaintop apertures, and a curious golden light dripped and drained down through the Pharos chambers deep into the mountain, like liquid fire running off the polished black walls. The early surveyors had found the Pharos, men working in the fleet sent out by Gilliman to expand the realm of Macragge, and reconnect with ancient fiefholdings that had been part of the realm before the Age of Strife. This had always been Conor's dream. Conor had ruled Ultramar from Macragge, but his Ultramar was but a shadow, a fraction of the culture that Ultramar had been before the Long Night. Conor had been determined to rebuild the mythical 500 worlds, and after his death, Gilliman had set out to achieve his father's ambition. It was while he was rebuilding the 500 worlds and making them the greatest empire in the galactic east that the crusading fleets of Terra had reached Macragge, and Gilliman had finally met his blood father and learned of his true inheritance. That the Pharos was an immense structure of Xenos origin had been obvious. That was why Sotha had been restricted and placed under guard while it was thoroughly investigated. Gilliman, so forward-thinking in other ways, had a natural mistrust of technologies not built by man, especially those that could not be easily reverse-engineered. The Pharos of Sotha was potentially many things, with many possible functions, and Gilliman was cautious of them all. The survey mission was established on the planet, a planet that otherwise would have been rapidly colonized and a community of settlers founded to support the scientists. This amused Dantioch. The settlers were simple agricultural workers, charged with food production and livestock management. They lived simple, pastoral lives on the lower slopes of the mountain. Forest growth on the slopes was rapid and vital. It had taken several years to clear the entrance apertures just to gain access. Every summer the farm workers came up from the arable fields in the valley below, bringing their scythes and harvesting hooks, and worked to clear away the year's grass and brush growth, where it had begun to choke and invade the gleaming black halls again. This simple rural tradition, dating back over 100 years, had given rise to the Protection Company's choice of icon. The people of the farming community did not hold the Pharos in any particular awe. It was simply part of their world. They often used its obsidian apertures as caves to shelter them and their herds from storms. They had also, long ago, discovered the extraordinary acoustic qualities of the linked chambers and halls, and had taken to playing their pipes and horns and psalteries in the deep caves, creating music of unparalleled beauty and mystery. From the first moment that he arrived to inspect the Pharos, Dantioch had understood that the interlinking chambers had not been intended as occupation spaces, at least not for any creatures of humanoid dimensions. There were often places of near impossible access between chambers, deep, polished drops, smooth, sheer curves, untenable slopes. There were no stairs, no measured walkways. In one particular instance, a vast trilobed chamber, shaped almost like a stomach, plunged away into a polished tube 700 metres deep, which opened in the ceiling of another vast semi-spherical hall 100 metres high. A long, slow process of construction had been undertaken over the years, establishing self-levelling prefabricated walkways of STC design to provide platforms, ladders, stairs and bridges that would allow humans to traverse and explore the almost endless interior of the Pharos. Dantioch and his Ultramarines escort descended on just such a walkway. The Imperial equipment, solid and steady, locked into place over the rolling, polished curves of the Pharos's chambers, seemed crude by comparison. Treated, unpainted metal, cold-pressed from a standard template, stamped with the Imperial Aquila, echoing to their footsteps with leaden clatters. When they walked upon the polished black, they made only the softest tapping sounds. The walkways, stairs and platforms were also dwarfed by the gloomy chambers they threaded through and seemed frail by comparison to the sheened black curves and cliffs. Arcus and his scouts patiently led the crippled warsmith to the abyssal plain of primary location Alpha. Twice on the journey they passed farm workers, eating supper and playing their instruments. Obadiah, one of the scouts and the youngest of the entire company, shooed them away. The Pharos had been officially out of bounds ever since Dantioch had brought the quantum pulse engines deep in the mountain's core online. They could all hear, or at least feel, the infrasonic throb of the vast and ancient devices. Dantioch had stood in primary location Alpha and nodded to his escort to withdraw. He had been fairly confident that he understood the function of the Pharos, even from the data he had studied before his arrival on Sotha. Gilliman had deduced it too. Primary location Alpha was, he was sure, the centre of the entire mechanism. Dantioch found himself referring to it in his notes as the tuning stage, or the sounding board. It was a vast cave of polished black, with a domed ceiling and an almost flat floor. Ghosts walked here, images of things light years away, drawn into the Pharos by its quantum processes. They were often fleeting, but always real. It had taken Dantioch 2 weeks and immense astronomical calculations to tune the Pharos as he wanted it. As he walked onto the tuning floor, Dantioch saw Gilliman appear before him, as if in the flesh. He had finally tuned the Xenos device to far-distant Macragg.
"It is as you speculated, my lord," Dantioch said. "The Pharos is part of an ancient interstellar navigation system. It is both a beacon and a route finder, and as we just saw, it also permits instantaneous communication across unimaginable distances."
"You say I speculated, Dantioch," said Gilliman's image, "but I never had the slightest clue what manner of technology it was."
"It is not fully understood by me either, lord," replied the warsmith. "It certainly involves a principle of quantum entanglement, but I believe that, unlike our warp technology that uses the immaterium to bypass real space, this quantum function once allowed for sight-to-sight teleportation, perhaps through a network of gateways. I also believe its fundamental function lies not with psychic energy, but with empathic power. It is an empathic system, adjusted to the needs of the user, not the will. I will provide fuller findings later."
"But it is a navigational beacon?" asked Gilliman.
"In many ways."
"You said it was part of a network."
Dantioch nodded.
I believe other stations like the Pharos must exist, or once existed, on other worlds throughout the galaxy.
Gilliman paused. So it is not one single beacon, like the Astronomicon?
No, Lord. In two ways. I believe the Pharos and other stations like it once used to create a network of navigational pathways between stars, as opposed to a single range-finding point the way the Astronomicon does, or did.
Go on.
It is more like a lantern than a beacon, Lord. You tune it, you point it, and illuminate a site or location for the benefit of range-finding. Now I have tuned to McCrag, I can, I believe, light up McCrag as a bright spot that will be visible throughout real space and the warp, despite the ruin storm.
Just as I see Sotha as a new star in the sky.
Yes, my lord.
Gilliman looked at him. I am loath to use Xenos technology, but the light of the Astronomicon is lost to us because of the ruin storm. To hold Ultramar together, to rebuild the 500 worlds, we must restore communication and travel links. We must navigate and reposition. We must pierce and banish this age of darkness. This is the first step towards our survival. This is how we fight back and overthrow Horus and his demon allies. Dantioch, I applaud you, and thank you for the peerless work you have done, and the labours you are yet to undertake.
My lord.
Dantioch, with difficulty, bowed.
Warsmith?
Yes, my lord?
Illuminate McCrag.